Welcome to Modern Practice. I'm your host, Dr. Tom Villanueva, and on this episode, I'll continue my discussion with Dr. David Munch on how to maintain clinical staff trust and engagement and avoid the leadership pitfalls we've seen during the pandemic. So, David, how important is leadership visibility?
It's critically important. As I said before, one of my favorite quotes from Don Berwick, if you're a leader and you're in your office, you're in the wrong place. What I discovered on being on the floor is I would get the real message. I would see the real reality of what was going on, what the needs were, what the problems were. If I were in my office receiving reports or looking over dashboards all day, I would not get reality. So being on the floors is absolutely critical with respect to, number one, knowing what's actually going on. Number two, establishing relationships with the people around you.
So how important is top-to-bottom communication then?
Top-to-bottom communication is extraordinarily important and in and of itself is insufficient. You have to have it both directions. It has to be top-to-bottom and it also has to be bottom-to-top. We have a saying in our process improvement division that the wisdom lies in the people who provide the care, the frontline staff. And so it is critically important not to have the conversations with those people who are the wisest of who we are, number one. But two, it also provides the opportunity for an exercise I term catchball. And that is a back and forth discussion until you come to an agreement. So let's say there's a problem that you want to be solved. Let's say we're having issues with central line infections. And we all know that there's physician and nursing components to central line infections. And so having a conversation with frontline staff around what gets in the way of this standard work around central line infections and listening to them and not being judgmental or not reacting inappropriately to them so that they're comfortable with that and saying, well, what would it take to get to this level? And you listen to their needs around that and you say, okay, I will provide that if you will do this. That back and forth conversation that includes them in not only the articulation of the problem, but the development of the solution is critically important because if they have authorship, guess what? Compliance and effectiveness go way up. So it is critically important to be where the work is being done as much as possible. Let me call out the biggest barrier to that. The biggest barrier to that is all of those meetings that we go to. And we've surveyed middle managers and executives, and the average amount of time that executives and middle managers spend in meetings is 65%. That is a dysfunction that we have to address. Because if you're in a meeting, guess where you're not? You're not on the floor is getting understandings, establishing relationships, coaching and developing, all these very important things to help build your system. So we have to redesign how we work, not just add stuff to it.
During this podcast and through different scenarios through Vizient, we learned that bottom-to-top communication is key towards innovation. In fact, in some of the areas of biggest innovation or significant innovation actually occurred from that bottom-to-top communication throughout the country. So let's talk about specialty-specific issues. Say, being an internist who wants to attain trust of a surgical specialty group. Any special skill set needed there?
There's a few things you need to do. First of all, you have to be there. So frequently, I would don my snowsuit or whatever you call it, and I would go into the surgical suite, and I would watch, and I would have conversations with surgeons in the surgeon's lounge. I would go into surgical suites in the periphery, understand those pieces, talk to the anesthesiologist, and make an effort to know their world. And make an effort to know their world in their world, all right? And it was also interesting to point out that a lot of the issues that needed to be addressed weren't necessarily surgical competency issues. They were administrative and operational issues. And so having a conversation with a surgeon around and tapping into them is, tell me what the problem is and what are your thoughts on the solution? What would good look like? And giving them an opportunity to help you build the response and the solution is critically important. But again, we've talked about it before, being where they are is the most important step towards having a relationship where they actually think you can do something for them.
You know, it goes back to the basics that you mentioned about being visible, going on rounds. That's what we do as doctors.
Yep, absolutely.
So this is the first time in our country's history where we're dealing with five different types of generation of physicians. Any issues you noticed around the generational issues among our providing group?
You know, it's interesting you mentioned that because I thought there would be, and there were some, but not nearly like I thought. I thought that the older, well-established, the 20-year-plus physicians would be the curmudgeon-y group and irresponsive, but that wasn't the case. Matter of fact, one of my most endearing colleagues was somebody who was in his late 50s, early 60s, and the wisdom I got from that person with respect to, when I'd run into barriers, they'd say, Dave, you know, did you think about this? What about this? Dave, you might run into a landmine here. Be careful about that. I was able to get some wonderfully collaborative relationships and help from people in the older generation. And what I found in the younger generation was people who actually wanted to be part of the solution. So when I asked for people to be on improvement teams, the younger provider said, I'll do it. I'll do it. And so what I thought I would see, I didn't see. And it sort of gets back to give everyone the benefit of the doubt. Do not prejudge anybody going to this. Even if you heard that somebody was a curmudgeon, give them the benefit of the doubt and they will surprise you.
I think at the end of the day, we all went into healthcare because we want to help. And quite frankly, if you're not part of the solution, then you're part of the problem. Interesting enough, going on in the generational issues, 30% of the physician population is over the age of 65. We've learned that from a recent podcast with the AAMCs with a physician shortage survey that they did. Now, it's actually been my observation that many of us don't completely retire, but significantly reduce our clinical hours, like you mentioned. So any ramifications to our healthcare system now, and are there any ramifications from the pandemic that may have changed that?
Boy, there's a number of ramifications from this, and it's quite worrisome. We have to press down the accelerator when it comes to developing teamwork, like we talked about before. We have to accelerate the ability to have efficiency as part of what we do so that a physician isn't spending 2.5 hours a day with administrative tasks that other people could do. So we have to make the job easier to provide the services that ultimately want providers to provide, number one. Number two, we have to develop teams and team-based systems around this as well, so that we can have other providers of other categories that can actually help with the patient care that we need. And then everyone now knows about bending the curve. We have to bend the curve of the rate of retirement and cutting back. And to do that, you have to understand why people are retiring either early or cutting back on their hours. They're likely burned out. They're likely exhausted because of the administrative and other hassles and pressures that have been layered on them that they didn't have before. So let's go back there and redesign the care so that these administrative burdens lessen or go away so that we can take advantage of and actually turn around that burnout cycle. We have to put the systems in place to make the right care easier to do so that we avoid these things.
So let's talk about how to initiate that. What are actions the leaders can start doing today to improve self-engagement and get some quick wins to act as a catalyst for consistent change?
There's a few things you need to do. I put it into sort of four groups, four stages. The first stage is do a good assessment of what's important, what the purpose of the organization is, as well as what are the barriers and what are the frustrations. Do a very detailed assessment as to where you are right now, because I've seen all too often people hear about a problem and they'll assume they know what the problem is, and then they'll find some quote unquote best practice and put it in thinking that it'll cure the problem, and it didn't. So take enough effort to know what's going on now, specifically to your area. And that does take some work. That takes observation, that takes mapping, that takes interviews and discussions with people who are suffering from that issue. But if you take the time up front, you'll be able to at least understand and know the real problem you have. Once you have done a good assessment, then now's your opportunity to design the solution. And just putting in somebody else's best practice may or may not be the appropriate design. You need to design a solution for the problem that you actually have. And putting that in place and making it efficient and not having too many steps, really thinking about it being elegantly simple is critically important. Test it to make sure it works, revise it if you need to, but design a good way of solving the problem. Once you've assessed something, once you've designed the new way well, once you've implemented it and it's working, then make sure you've done enough, if you will, coaching of people in the new way so that they actually do it that way. I can tell you when I was first starting this work, I made assumptions that just because we designed a new process, we can't assume that people know how to do it, nor would they do it in that way. You have to orient people, you have to coach them, you have to give them feedback, you have to set up process measures. There is something towards the deployment efforts that have to occur to make sure that the good process you've designed actually gets done. And then finally, you have to set up systems to sustain the good way. And so how you do some process measures, how you mitigate for entropy or the Hawthorne effect is critically important, because I've seen a lot of really good solutions over the course of years wane because nobody put in place the sustainment mechanisms. So if you do a good assessment, you do a good design, you do a good deployment, and you do a good sustainment, and keep that cycle going, you will actually move the needle permanently. It won't be when you move that slips back over time. And that's been a huge problem in healthcare, is the slippage of good efforts.
That's fantastic advice. So again, it's actually looking for or having a great assessment, then designing a solution, not particularly looking for best practice, but seeing what makes sense for your institution. Coaching, which I hear from there, the importance of clarity and messaging, and then having a system for sustainability, which I would imagine is even coming up with metrics. That way you can follow through and measure how you're going along.
Absolutely. You have to have the right metrics. You have to have the right cadence of review. And you have to retool what managers do in their workflow so that they have the time to help sustain and to observe the new processes in action.
That's fantastic. Any final thoughts?
Well, first of all, thank you for the opportunity. I do think the subject matters we're talking about are critically important. Let's make the silver lining around COVID as silver and as thick as we can. Let's learn good things from this crisis, and let's come out of this strong. So thank you for the opportunity.
David, we've reached the end of our discussion. Thanks for taking the time for joining us in these last two episodes. I appreciate your insights into renewing trust and engagement in the clinical staff. And to our listeners, please join us for other Modern Practice podcasts on the Vizient Medical Leadership Channel. Subscribe today, like us, or send us your comments. And also, please listen and subscribe to SG2 Perspectives, the podcast in the latest healthcare strategy. I'm Dr. Tom Villanueva. Thanks for listening.